Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the star of Taming of the Shrew, now at Shakespeare Theater Company, now through June 26th. Sir, why don't you introduce yourself to the camera?
Hello. I'm Malik Pancholi, and I am the star of the Shakespeare Theater Company's production of Taming of the Shrew, as Jason just said.
Yes.
Hi.
And it's a very special production of this, because unlike other versions of the Shakespeare classic, this is an all-male cast, correct?
That's right.
So tell us about the character, the interesting character you're playing in this.
I'm playing Katharina Minola, who is the shrew in the Taming of the Shrew. I mean, what can I tell you about her? I think she's one of Shakespeare's like great female roles. She's feisty and angry and envious, and she's got a lot of emotional life that she's like willing to share with people. And then she undergoes a pretty transformative journey in the play where I think she lets go of a lot of that. And I think she learns over the course of the play that she can be whoever she wants to be, and it probably is a little bit easier to be loving and forgiving than it is to be angry and envious.
Awesome.
That's a very brief summation of a very complex character.
I love it. Well, and before we dive even further, so that was sort of the summary of the character itself. Give us, in case, let's say, maybe some of our listeners maybe didn't read it in high school or whatever.
How dare they?
Yeah, give them the quick plot synopsis.
Yeah, so essentially, it's the Taming of the Shrew, and Kate is this headstrong woman who gets married off to Petruchio, who is... in our production, a little bit lower class, a little bit rough, and promises to tame her through the show. And it's a bit of a problematic play, and that I think that makes a lot of people uncomfortable that this man tames this woman into submission. But that's ultimately the plot. And then the B story, as it were, to borrow from television, is that her sister Bianca is the beautiful one that all the men want to marry and is being wooed by all these people. And I think, especially in our production, but in the play itself, Bianca also undergoes a transformation, I think, in this play in terms of the person that she actually gets to choose to marry. So it's a lot about love and agency and commodity. These women are being sold into marriage. And on top of it all, it's a comedy.
Yeah.
So I know that sounds very dark and dangerous in a way, because the play is, but I think Shakespeare has given us lots of moments of levity to make the play fun and interesting and the night a really fun night.
Yeah. Why? What's sort of the idea of the all male cast? You know, we got a female Ghostbusters coming out.
That's right.
You know, we're doing a lot of gender bending here. But
yeah.
So what's and it's not the first time, obviously. You have Mary Martin playing Peter Pan. You have the guy in Hairspray. You know, it always happens. But
yeah.
Why? What makes this a unique way? And why do you think the production chose to do it this way?
Yeah, I mean, just to touch on like the history of it. I mean, obviously, back in Shakespeare's time, all the productions were all male. So there's a little nod to history in that. There's also an all female production of Taming of the Shrew happening in Central Park in New York City right now. So obviously there's been some interest in like, how do you explore this play with a same gender cast, you know? And I think what we're trying to do, for the people who do know the play, there's the final monologue that Kate has at the end of the speech, which is about a woman's role in life and her duty to her husband. And I think it rubs a lot of people in a very abrasive way. And I think one of the things that we wanted to do is like, if we remove the equation of gender from that piece, and if you can say, instead of it being a play about men versus women or a battle of the sexes, but if it can be about two individual journeys, and with Kate and Petruchio, two individual people on a journey, what does that open up in the play? And I think that's kind of what we're trying to explore with an all-male cast, is to say, like, let's take that piece out of it. So you're not watching a woman say these words that might feel horrifying to you, but you're watching a person say these words. And what does that open up in the play? And for me, I think that's opened up quite a bit.
Right. Okay. So the sort of the idea is to strip all of that away, you know, the whatever criticisms might have been out there over the years of, you know, maybe misogyny or whatever.
Yeah.
Strip it away with an all-male cast, with an all-female cast in New York, and let's just let the play stand.
Yeah. And not to say that it might not still hit you in a certain way, but to say, like, let's take that layer off of it and see, I think for us, to see how individual you can get with these people. And I think as an actor, like, whenever you can get more specific with an individual character, audiences resonate in a far more universal way. Whereas if you try to play like, I am every woman, most people are going to be like, well, who are you then?
Yeah. You're not Whitney.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Exactly.
So there's been a lot of different versions of this, right? So
yeah.
There was Liz Taylor and Richard Burton as a big movie guy. That was 1967.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was made into Kiss Me, Kate
on
stage. And then maybe younger listeners might even remember the Heath Ledger, Julia Stiles, 10 Things I Hate About You was also based on Taming of the Shrew.
Right.
If they've seen one of those versions, how might this, sort of compare to that? What should they expect?
I think it's really, really different. We're also singing Duncan Sheik songs in the middle of our show. I think the production itself is what we're calling an immersive production, that as soon as you get to the theater, there's actors out in the lobby, like, interacting with you during the intermission. You can come up on stage and participate in a show that's happening on stage during the intermission. We're out in the lobby at the end of the show interacting with people again. So there's a sense of the audience really being a part of the community of the show and really being with us on the journey as opposed to us presenting something to them. But I would say, like, in terms of the movie, which I haven't seen in a while, I think it was a very different take on the character and Elizabeth Taylor.
You're Liz Taylor. Did you ever know you were going to be Liz Taylor?
I mean, I dreamed. One can only dream as a young boy. Did you ever want to be Elizabeth Taylor?
No, never really. I've always loved her movies. You know, I love her. She's great.
But I think in that production of the play, first of all, they were also really playing on their real life.
Right.
Like, the real life relationship between Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, I think, was present in that
in
movie.
A lot of their stuff, yes.
But that was a very slapsticky, yeah. I think she was a little bit of like the feisty Katarina,
right.
I think what I'm trying to bring to this role is, especially because now, I mean, we're like, you know, decades later in terms of gender politics and
centuries.
But but from the Liz Taylor movie.
I see. Yeah,
but
yeah,
like,
yeah.
But I think, you know, I'm trying to bring like a dignity to Kate. She's a woman who knows what she wants, and society hates her for knowing what she wants. She's a woman who speaks her mind, and society's like, how dare you speak your mind as a woman? And I think that's different from a lot of these productions that you're talking about.
That's awesome. And it's fun to watch how sort of it evolves with society, too.
Yeah.
You mentioned Duncan Sheik. A lot of our listeners will remember, what was this? I Am Barely Breathing.
Barely Breathing, which is featured in our show.
That was the big 90s. Actually in there?
It's in the show.
How do you weave that in? What scene do you weave that in?
Well, you're just gonna have to come see it.
Oh, okay. There's a teaser. All right. Yeah. No, but he's. I mean, obviously, it's not just '90s. You know, on the radio, he did. He's done some Broadway shows,
right? Spring Awakening.
He did Spring Awakening, won Tony's, American Psycho on Broadway.
Yeah.
Talk about what it was like working with him. How much is he actually involved in this?
You know, he wasn't actually around for a lot of the rehearsal. Like most of the songs that we're using are songs that he had already written that had been woven into the show that he gave to us to use. Our director is, I think, working on a project with him, which is why Duncan wanted to be a part of this.
And
but the songs sort of alarmingly make sense, which makes you wonder about Duncan's love life. But but they I think they're woven in a way that hopefully illuminates like the character's journey and highlights things about the play that you might not have thought about. For example, like, why does Barely Breathing work? And I think when you come to see the show, I think it does work. So,
all right.
Yeah.
See, if Duncan Sheik is watching our Facebook Live, he might come at you. You know, he's wondering about you, questioning his love life. No, that's hilarious.
I know.
How you even weave that in there? I'm excited to see that, actually.
Yeah.
Well, all right. You mentioned the director was collaborating with someone else. Who's directing it, and what's it been like working with him? What's his strength?
Our director is Ed Sylvanus Iskandar, who's been doing a lot of pretty. I guess experimental or like kind of off the wall theater in New York. He's done a bunch of off-Broadway plays. The last thing he did, I think, I don't know if it was the last thing he did, but it was a 5-hour production based on the Bible with like,
whoa. Only 5 hours?
How do you fit it in? I think it had like, it might have even been 6 hours. I can't remember, but it's
3 hours Old Testament, 3 hours New Testament.
Yeah. and then some songs.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it had like multiple playwrights and like a cast of 50 or something like that.
Wow.
It was insane. And it had dinner in the middle of it. And so he's been really kind of pushing the envelope with theater and been really curious about how do you make an audience more part of the theater experience?
Like an interactive idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he has this belief that like we're spending a night together and that on any given night you have a choice of things to do. And if you chose to come to the theater, like we should honor that and say thank you and invite you in and say, we appreciate that you're spending the night with us, as opposed to like, you're coming to see us and we're the stars and, you know, all that kind of silliness. And Ed's great. He's super imaginative. I think if you get out to see the show, you'll see that like, it's really beautiful. The sets is amazing. The costumes are like I mean, I've never worn clothes as beautiful. I've never worn women's clothes before, so that might be part of it. But
so it's all period, though, all the costumes.
It's a sort of it is a period, but it's not maybe as definable a period as you might think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that, you know, he's the one that's directing this. It's his, you know, spin on this classic tale.
Yeah.
But what about the original creator, Shakespeare? What do you think is about him and his command of language and to be able to weave it so poetically? You know, I mean, we are all familiar with Shakespeare, but having grappled with it night in, night out, you know, from rehearsals to performing, what's sort of his genius?
Oh my God. It's like, that's such a big question.
I throw it up. Now have at it.
I think that is it. I think he is a genius. And I think as an actor, it's like a great gift to get to speak those words. And I'll tell you that, like, after 5 weeks of rehearsal and a week of previews, and now we've been in a week of performance, every night there are still new things that, like, pop out at me, and I'm like, oh my God, he brought that language back, or oh my gosh, I get it, like, in that scene before I said this and now I'm saying this. And the poetry, like, it just, people often ask, like, how do you learn all the lines or whatever, which is like such, people always ask actors that. But with Shakespeare, it's like he is in your body, like, and if you just ride that language, it opens up so much for you. I think that Shakespeare, he doesn't mince words. Obviously, like, what he says is the truth. And for me, the entry point to this character was, I have this line that says, my tongue will tell the anger of my heart, or else my heart concealing it will break. And I don't think that's a metaphor. Like, wow. I think that Shakespeare is literally saying, like, I'm so angry that my heart will burst open if I don't let it out. Wow. And to me, that was like the starting point for this character, that it's not that she just, like, wants to tear people down and rip them apart. It's that her heart can't hold what she's feeling. And I think that, like, to get to speak language like that, like, what playwright is giving you that? And he wrote this, you know, in 1590 something, and it's still so relevant. Yeah.
So that's sort of the line that you said was your entry point. That's the one that initially jumped off the page.
Yeah,
and
I think
was
so.
Your entry.
Yeah.
Was there one that, now that you've done it a lot, you know, over and over again, that was sort of a, maybe you didn't quite grasp what he was going for at first, but now that you've done it so many times, is there either a scene or a line that you said, wow, like, on repeat watch, that really jumps off now?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a really challenging scene in Act Two where Petruchio is basically trying to get Kate, I think, to see that the world can be anything she wants it to be. And he's arguing with her about whether or not the sun is out or the moon is out.
And at TOP, we often ask that question. We don't know. A lot of ask our morning drive people. They're saying the sun and the moon is the same thing.
Exactly. And I feel like that was a challenging scene for me, because I feel like in some ways she has to be willing to give up her idea of what truth is, and say truth can be anything I want it to be. And I think we found a really lovely place to play, but every night it's a little different for me, because I think this is the other great strength of Shakespeare, is that people often say this with Shakespeare, that the actor's problem is the character's problem. So if a line is, like, really hard to get out, it's probably because it's really hard for the character to get out too.
I see.
You know, if a line is bringing up all this emotion in you, it's probably because the character is in that emotional place. And I think, like, for me too, every night it's a little bit like, oh my God, can I enter into this new reality or can I not? And so it's exciting and fun, but also a little scary every night. Yeah.
Tell me about some of your co-stars. Who's playing the other major roles? Who's in there? Let's say the Richard Burton role.
Yeah, it's this amazing actor named Peter Gaddio, who's about to be on a new series on USA called Queen of the South that I think premieres any moment now.
Awesome. Set your DVRs.
Set your DVRs. I'm giving Peter, that's a plug for you. he's incredible. I think we've found, like, a really, really great way to work together and have developed this chemistry that I think is like exciting and fun, and I think it's sort of like shocking for an audience. You know, I'm a man playing a woman in like women's clothing, and so, like, the famous line from the play that he says three times, in fact, "Kiss me, Kate, kiss me, Kate, kiss me, Kate," which has been, a whole musical was written on it, as you mentioned earlier. I'm so fascinated about what audiences are seeing, because they're seeing two men kissing, they're seeing a transgender person maybe kissing, they're seeing a man and a woman kissing. And so, like, I think we're pushing boundaries, and we've both been so game to do that, and it's been really fun. And a beautiful actor named Oliver Thornton is playing my sister, Bianca.
Is he from West End?
He's from the West End. He's done, like, every musical in the West End. He's got
Rent, Chicago, all that stuff.
Yeah. And he's terrific. And I'm trying to think. The other man playing a woman is a DC local guy named Rick Hammerly. Do you know Rick?
I know Rick.
Yeah?
Yeah, from the old film school circuit. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like indie short film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
is hilarious and funny. And so we've got an incredible cast. Yeah. Andre DeShields, Broadway legend. Andre DeShields.
He was in here a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
The original Wiz. Yeah.
Yeah,
he came in
Wiz.
With Tim Douglas for King Hedley II.
Oh, cool.
At Arena
Stage. Cool.
Yeah. Andre's great.
Oh, my God. It's like such a gift to get to work with him. I mean, I've been a fan of his for I don't know how long. And now I'm going to do a play with him.
I bring this up a lot when people come in here, but whenever Andre comes up, he said something that was so incredible when he came in here. It was almost like a spiritual moment for all of us. And I was like, this is what the entertainment page needs to be. So he broke down. He said the Indo whatever roots of the word entertainment is to hold and to change. And I was like, you know what? That's what every play should be. It's not.
Wow.
You know, it's not the reality show Kardashian stuff. It's art and culture that will hold you and change you in a way. So how
that's
we'll
amazing.
Spin it
yeah.
we'll spin it to you then. So how if someone coming in here, how's the play gonna hold you? And then when you come out, how might you be changed after having seen this?
I think the play will hold you because it's so interesting and it's so it's such a unique, I think, take on a theater in general and Shakespeare and this play. I hope people are changed. I will say, and I hope this doesn't sound like back patting, but
no, go for it.
A woman came up to so we're out in the lobby at the end of the show, and a woman came up to me the other night and started to talk to me and then just started crying. And she's like, I can't even talk to you. I'm so sorry, but I just wanted to say thank you for your performance. She's like, I was really moved by it. And to me, it's like, you know, I know it's like one person of the hundreds that come every night, but to have that from one person to feel like that maybe you've resonated something with them that's broken something open in them to the point that they're moved to tears, like I feel like I went home and slept very well that night.
It made it all worth it, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell me a little bit about your own personal background. Where'd you?
Yeah.
I know a lot of us remember you from Weeds and 30 Rock and a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I'll ask you about those in a second. But tell me about how you got started acting. And you went was it Yale and
Yeah.
Go into sort of how you discovered this.
Sure.
Craft.
Yeah. I don't know. My parents tell me that when I was 5 years old, I was telling them that I wanted to be an actor, and I don't know.
Where is this?
I don't know
what
I was thinking. I was born in Ohio, and then we lived in Indiana, and then lived in Texas, and then we lived in Florida. So all the great states.
All around, yeah.
all
the
great
swing
states of America.
Yeah,
all the swing states, yeah. so I guess when I was 5, I was living in Indiana, and you know, I was pretty awkward kid. I was like super nerdy. I was like really small for my age. I was one of the only Indian people growing up in largely rural white, you know, parts of the country. And at 5, this was not coming into play at all, but certainly,
sure.
Certainly, like, I think at an early age, even though I didn't know how to place my finger on it, like my sexuality was causing me to feel a little different than like the other kids. And so I do think that looking back, obviously, like as a kid, I don't know why I wanted to be an actor, but I think there was like a part of me that must have been like, oh, this is a place where I can be anyone I want to be. And
I see.
And disappear. And I remember watching movies at an early age and just being like so transfixed by them. And
which one stood out?
I mean, like as a teenager, I remember watching like Kramer versus Kramer over and over, but it's like not really appropriate for a teenager.
For a teenager,
yeah.
No. And, Best Picture 79, and you're watching it when you're like, you know,
yeah.
a freshman or something.
I mean, I don't even, I think
Meryl
it was
Streep
more like when I was like 12.
Oh,
I know, and
God.
I was like, oh my God, these people are amazing. And
it's a great flick.
And
he's trying to make her the eggs. It's amazing.
I know, yeah.
Or make
I know.
The kid the eggs. Yeah, it's amazing.
And he's so bad at it. But I will say that like over the course of the years, I think in some ways when I first got into this business, I thought you could disappear into a character and like that was sort of like the joy of it. You could run away from things in your life. And I actually feel like as an adult actor and hopefully a more mature actor, my sense of it is that it's really about bringing more and more of yourself to a role and all of your life experiencing and life experiences and revealing yourself. Like, and I think, as you mentioned, I went to Yale Drama, and I think that a big part of that training for me, apart from all the technical stuff, but a big part of that training for me was like, how much of your heart are you willing to bring to something, and how dangerous are you willing to let it be because you've brought so much of yourself to it.
What were some of the shows you did there? I'm curious.
At Yale, we did a lot of Shakespeare. I did.
We're in high school. Some of your earlier roles.
Well, one of my earliest roles was doing like the Scarecrow in the Wizard of Oz in community theater in Tampa, Florida.
Of course, some people go both ways.
Playing Eugene the nerd in Grease, and this is all like Tampa, nice. Tampa community theater. It's so funny because on 30 Rock they kind of make fun of Tampa because Jenna Maroney, Jane Krakowski's character, is like from Tampa and went to like the Tampa Dramatic Academy or something like that, but that's actually what I was doing. I was doing like these Tampa acting classes, and you know what? And those teachers are amazing. Actually, one of my teachers from Tampa, this woman named Kathy Grau, I credit with like so much. She was one of the first people who came up to me and was like, "You're funny, and like we're gonna like develop that in you." And she like helped me apply to schools, and awesome. That early on, I had like a lot of great mentors who really believed in me, and that's huge.
All right.
Yeah. Cool.
And then
yeah.
How'd you make your way onto some of the biggest shows of the last, you know, a decade here?
I don't know, on a wing and a prayer, man. I got so lucky.
How'd you land 30 Rock? And what was it like working with freaking Tina Fey and Alec Baldwin and everybody?
It was amazing. I had just moved to New York right out of grad school at Yale, and I had a day job. And I got this audition for this show called 30 Rock that no one knew what it was going to be. And I remember I like had to run to it on my lunch break. Luckily, I was an assistant at my day job and I was auditioning to play an assistant. So there's no costume change required.
So you were barely breathing back then.
Exactly, man. I was just like, I got this. And I remember I went in with the casting director, who I love, amazing woman named Jen McNamara. And it was in the pilot episode, I had like zero lines. It was like this whole scene where I'm handing Alec Baldwin like post-it notes. Wow. And so I did this whole thing and I left. And then like a week later, they were like, "We want you to come back and read for Tina Fey and just explore the physical comedy." And so I was like, "What does that mean? Explore the physical comedy of handing someone a post-it note." So I took in like a whole stack of post-it notes and Tina Fey's in the room. And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm in the room with Tina Fey."
Surreal.
And so I like was ridiculous. Like I was like dropping post-it notes everywhere and writing notes on my arm. And I remember leaving and I called my agent at the time and I was like, "So I blew that audition because I was like way over the top. I don't know what I was thinking. Like I was like falling on myself and doing stupid stuff." And then it all went away because I think Tina was like pregnant maybe at the time or whatever. But there was like a big period of time between auditioning and when they actually made the pilot episode. And I was actually doing another pilot in LA and they called and they're like, "Will you come in and do this?" And I remember being like, "Oh my God, I don't know if I can do it." And my agent was like, "You have to do this. It's Tina Fey." And like somehow they worked it out that I got to fly home and do like one day on this show with Alec Baldwin and then fly back. And then from there, the show took off. So I feel like it was all sort of like a bizarre thing that just fell into place.
Do people recognize you from the show? Do they come up with a post-it note to sign?
Well, I feel like we came a far way from the post-it notes. Like, I feel like that relationship got developed over 7 seasons in a really, really nice way. Yeah, people recognize me, and I feel like the 30 Rock fans are smart and cool and very funny and are never like crazy intrusive. And I'm always grateful when people tell me that they love the show. And yeah. Yeah.
Well, bringing it around full circle from, you know, you grew up watching Kramer versus Kramer, and now you're doing sort of a Tootsie. So it's a little, so there you go.
Oh my God, I never thought about that.
And there you
nice.
Go.
Well,
feel free
Nicely
to use that.
Done.
Feel free to use that. It's your Dustin Hoffman. Awesome. Yeah. So why should people come out? A lot of people, I mean, you know, in D.C., I feel like people take for granted all the museums, all the great theaters, you know, they come out of, maybe they've left a Wizards or a Caps game at Verizon and seen Shakespeare Theater Company.
Right across the street.
Have never stopped in. Explain how beautiful and awesome a place this is just to have right here.
Well, it is. I mean, what's really cool, because I know D.C. a little bit. I'm actually serving on a commission at the White House right now, so I get down to D.C. to work on that, and I have
family. Name drop.
What? I didn't mean, I just meant to say,
I
know I make people cry. I work with the president. I'm amazing. No, I don't know why I'm talking like that. Who am I? I'm Tootsie.
Yeah, there you go.
You put me in women's clothing, and I will do
How
anything.
You play Twitter?
And I have family. I have family in Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Oh, awesome.
I didn't grow up here, but I have family who've moved here. My mom lives here now and my sister lives here. So I get down a fair amount. Awesome. But I will say this, I didn't actually realize how vibrant and amazing the DC theater scene is. But we have a ton of local DC actors in the cast. And I always say it's
a secret weapon of this town, man.
It really
is.
You
think politics, but there's so many plays and national awards that are handed out at the Kennedy Center Honors, whatever. But so much great creative minds come through here.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
And we were talking with some people earlier today, and they were like, the DC theater scene has like exploded in the last several years, and there's so much cool stuff happening down here. So if the Shakespeare Theater is not on your tourist destination as a tourist to DC, I think it should be, because it is some of the I would say like more exciting and better theater that's happening in this country. And that's not just to say like our production but go see a play, go see a show.
You heard it. Put it on your calendar, folks. Write a post-it note if you have to and get yourself out there.
Write it on your arm.
Yeah, exactly. Now I know we're doing the Facebook Live thing. I want to check in. Do we have any questions here?
A few nice comments, but okay. No questions.
Okay, well, thanks for your live, your nice comments. remind us again, it goes until June 26th at Shakespeare Theater Company.
Shakespeare Theater, right across from the Verizon Center. Yeah. We're there 8 shows a week, so come by and see us.
Yeah, see, you know, Caps and Wizards are both, they're not in the playoffs, so you're good. This is what we got to do down by Verizon. So head out and see Taming of the Shrew. Thanks so much for coming in, Malik.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This was a lot of fun.
This was super awesome.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks.